The new Vortex Diamondback Tactical First Focal Plane, pistol caliber carbines, and running a match without ROs, this week on Mail Call Mondays. I'm John McQuay with 8541 Tactical, and this is Mail Call Mondays, the show that answers your questions about precision rifles, optics, and equipment. Welcome to another Mail Call Mondays, and our first question this Monday comes from Keith. And Keith asks, what are your thoughts on the new Vortex Diamondback Tactical First Focal Plane scope? And to follow that up, Chris also asked, especially for an NRL 22 base class scope. Now, I took a look at the Diamondback Tactical FFP, not to be confused with the second focal plane version of the same scope, and the specs on it and the price point look to be really promising for an entry-level scope. Now, it is in that $400 or so price point, and I'm specifically looking at the 4 to 16 power version. What I tend to find is with the higher power versions, the 6 to 24, etc., when you start to get into that power range at this price point, then the top-end glass usually is less than optimal clarity. So you have to sacrifice something to get to that price point, and very often it is the clarity at maximum magnification. Now, since Chris is asking specifically for an NRL 22 scope, because it is under the price point for base class for NRL 22, the 4 to 16 would be a really good magnification range. You're not really going to need more than 16. I'm a little power hungry, so I like scopes that go up to 25 power and above, but the reality is it's not really necessary in NRL 22. In fact, my 1022 now has a SIG optics scope on it that maxes out well below what the ATACR F1 in front of me maxes out at. So for NRL 22, the 4 to 16 I think would be a good option. Also, in the lower magnification ranges, you generally get a closer focus on that minimum parallax distance. Now, that's the one thing that I didn't check on this scope is what the minimum parallax is. So you want to make sure that you can get into that 25 yards. And that's about the inner limit for what you're going to shoot on NRL 22. But you need to be able to focus your parallax down to that point. Now, the elevation on the scope is going to be, kind of limited by that 30 millimeter tube. You're not going to get a ton of elevation, but I think you're going to be just fine again for NRL 22 stuff. The really interesting thing that I saw on it is they do not offer a mil version of this scope. You can get it with a mil reticle, but you can't get it with mil turrets. Apparently, quarter MOA clicks is the only option for the turrets. Now, they do offer a really nice EBR2 reticle in the MOA version in this scope. So if you decide to go with this scope for competitive shooting, I would definitely get the MOA version. So MOA turrets, which is your only option, but then go with the MOA reticle. That way the two match. You only have to worry about one dope versus dialing or holding. You don't have to worry about carrying two dope cards and remembering one trajectory when you're holding over and one when you're dialing. So definitely get those two matched up. And it's nice that they do offer the MOA reticle in it. I just really wish they would offer a mil version too. But I think that would probably push the price point up a little bit since they would have to retool for the mil version, whereas the internals, the previous Diamondback scopes were meant at an angle adjustment, so they're probably just carrying over the same adjustments. You do have a 30 millimeter tube, which, again, if we're talking about 22 stuff, if we're talking about intermediate range stuff, is not that big of a deal. When you start to really stretch out and you start to stretch out with less than optimal calibers, then you really need that elevation adjustment. So again, we're juggling this price point versus features. But I think, again, for NRL 22 type stuff, or really budget oriented type builds, I think the Diamondback Tactical is going to be a viable option. Now, of course, all this is speculation based on what I've seen on the build sheet, the specs. I don't actually have one in my hands yet. I may look at picking one up for the budget 2018 build. We'll see how that goes. I haven't really decided on an optic for it yet. But this definitely comes in that interesting point where it may qualify for it. So hopefully we'll be able to get our hands on one, get it in, bang one around, put it on a 22 and put it on a centerfire rifle and see how that works out. Our next question comes from Joseph, and Joseph asks, how do you feel about pistol caliber carbines? Do you have a favorite? Well, Joseph, that really depends on exactly how we frame that question. Are we framing it from a competition standpoint, or are we looking at it from a tactical standpoint? From a tactical standpoint, I don't see a lot of purpose behind a pistol caliber carbine. In a law enforcement environment, pistol caliber carbines were tried because there were a few options out there that would take the same magazines as the officer's service weapon. For instance, with Glocks, you can get a 9mm carbine that accepts Glock magazines. So if you carried a Glock 17 for your service pistol, or a Glock 34, something like that, you could have an AR platform that takes that same magazine, so you don't have to carry extra mags on your belt. Anything that will work in the carbine will work in your handgun. Anything that will work in your handgun will work in the carbine. So that was the whole idea behind it. The problem that you run into is now you have a long gun that has the performance of the pistol. You get a little bit more velocity, so you do get a little bit more terminal energy, and you get a little bit more accuracy for better shot placement because the carbine is more stabilized than a handgun, even when you're holding it in a nice two-handed position. But you do not have the ability to defeat armor. You have reduced ability to defeat intermediate barriers. So you kind of end up with this one foot in, one foot out kind of deal. And it's not something that really I want. If I'm going to have to go with a larger overall package, something I can't fit in a holster, something I'm not going to be able to walk around with on patrol day in and day out, I want something that is going to function like a rifle. I want something that's going to defeat heavier barriers. I want something that is definitely going to defeat body armor. And I want something that has the ability to reach out to a greater distance. Now, if we get into stuff like entry teams, SWAT, specialized purposes, that's where we're no longer really talking about pistol caliber carbines, and we're talking about submachine guns. Submachine guns firing pistol caliber cartridges, 9mm or 45 ACP, they have some very unique capabilities and they have some unique drawbacks as well. But a suppressed submachine gun, I think, brings a whole lot more to the table than a regular pistol caliber carbine. And it's really outside the scope of this discussion how submachine guns work into law enforcement or into entry team type tactics. Now, when we switch over to armed citizen type situations, again, we start to get into that discussion about being able to utilize the same magazines in a handgun and a carbine. And we, again, run into the same problems with defeating intermediate barriers and defeating armor. So kind of the same discussion applies there. Now, when we move over into competition, that is a totally different matter completely. A lot of the competitions that I shoot in right now, Steel Challenge, not so much IDPA, although I am interested in getting back into IDPA, USPSA, and a lot of other competitions now allow pistol caliber carbines to compete. Now, this is a huge benefit for me because now I can take an AR version, a pistol caliber carbine and an AR platform, I can go shoot these matches and I can get a lot more gun handling skills, a lot more moving with the carbine practice in, and do so with a little bit less of a ballistic penalty in a more controlled environment. So for instance, Steel Challenge is a great example. Steel Challenge allows you to practice target transitions and weapons manipulation, coming up from safe and engaging that target and then moving to different targets, and allows you to do so in a very rapid fashion in a situation where you could not use a standard 5.56 or 223 carbine. Shooting steel at close range with a rifle caliber system can be quite dangerous, and it can be very, very hard on steel targets. So it's obvious that that would not be allowed in a Steel Challenge match. So now I can take the exact same platform, chamber it in 9mm, and run it in that match and get all that extra practice, which then directly translates over to a patrol rifle if I roll out on the street with it. For service members, that is practice that directly translates over to their service weapon. Now, notice I said practice. I didn't say training. We have to be really careful to draw that line. Competition is not training. Competition has a lot of benefits. It has gun handling skills. It can add a little bit of stress, although it's slightly different stress than what you feel in an armed confrontation. But it's all things that allow you to handle that weapon and become more proficient with handling the weapon. That then translates over to handling that weapon in a tactical scenario. So that is really a nice thing overall. Now, utilizing something like IDPA, you have shoots and no shoots and all kinds of other barricade situations, and you have movement situations. So now, again, you're able to utilize a pistol caliber carbine in a situation and get that practice on it in an environment that you normally would not be able to fire a 5.56 or 223. So in that area, I'm really excited about the pistol caliber carbine thing, and I have seriously considered purchasing one for myself. Now, I've gone as far as to go on JP Rifle's website and actually configure one of their pistol caliber carbines up. And this video is not sponsored by JP Rifles. I just have seen their rifles work very well. They seem to be a very reliable platform. And that's one of those things with pistol caliber carbines. If you're building an AR platform up, there are some landmines that you kind of have to navigate around with parts incompatibility and issues with bolt hold open uppers or bolt hold open lowers and mag blocks and all this other stuff. What trigger groups work, what trigger groups won't work. So it's something that you really have to be aware of and do your homework if you're going to piece one together yourself. Whereas if I go configure one from JP, I'm going to pay a little bit higher price, but I'm going to get top shelf components. I'm going to get a system that has been tested by them and delivered ready to roll. So it's definitely something that I'm considering. Although if I go that route, it will be a regular 16-inch carbine build, as opposed to if I do a build it yourself kind of thing, I'll build up a little shorty pistol build. That way it's something that I can put a suppressor on and not have an overly long system. So that's kind of my overall feeling about the pistol caliber carbine situation. I'm really excited about them. I think they are a really cool setup overall. If you're going to run a suppressor on them, they're really cool with a suppressor because, again, you get a compact system, you get a really quiet system, but you've mitigated a lot of the handling problems when you hang a big honking suppressor on the end of a handgun. I like that they're available in competition. I probably would not choose one of those as a defensive weapon as opposed to a regular 5.56 AR-15. Our next question comes from Lou, and Lou asks, locally, we have a hard time running club matches and getting a dedicated RO for each stage. In your opinion, what's the best way to run a club match without ROs? Well, Lou, that's kind of a common situation in smaller clubs where the guys that are going to be doing the RO duties are going to want to shoot the match as well. It's going to be hard to get guys to come out, as you've discovered, and tell them, hey, you're not going to shoot. You're just going to sit in this chair and look through this scope and score everything. If you are a larger club, you may be able to do rotating ROs and require that throughout the year everyone spends at least one rotation or one match doing RO duties. But smaller clubs, you're generally not going to get that. If you don't have a really good regular attendance, you're not going to get that in there. It's really going to be better off to do rotating ROs. If your stages are broken up over a larger area, then you're going to need to break your guys up into squads. And within that squad, there's going to have to be a couple of people that are willing to do RO duties. So they would come up, they would RO half of the squad through, and then someone else would switch over and RO the rest of the squad and that previous RO and run them through. So as long as everyone is on the same sheet of music, and that usually means the match director briefing each stage before the match begins, then there's really not any problem with it. Very often what our local club will do is we'll have quite a few different people spotting shots if they're not actually on the gun or if they're not waiting on deck for their turn. Then quite a few different people will be spotting for impacts. One guy will be running the time and one guy will be running the scoreboard, and they just switch off periodically depending upon who's next up. And that works really well, again, at club level. There's not going to be a whole lot of disputes about, hey, that was an impact, or hey, that wasn't, or some guy trying to game it and somebody else not calling them on it. Now, I don't know that I would recommend this if you're talking about like a national level match where there's a lot of prizes on the table and a lot of money up for grabs. Because then if you don't have a guy standing there enforcing the rules, making sure everybody has the same fair chance at that stage, then there can be some shenanigans that go on. Now, if you guys run your local matches a different way, please leave a comment down below so maybe we can help Lou out with some more ideas. I'd love to hear how you guys handle RO duties at your local ranges. And that's about it for the questions for this Mail Call Mondays. Real quick before we go, I am going to again talk about the ultimatum deadline. Some of you guys may be sick of hearing about it, but I know other guys out there are actually building these up right now and want to hear what's going on. Well, we have got more than half of the ultimatum deadline build video going up. Our Patreon subscribers actually got a sneak peek at the assembly portion of the video. Now, again, because we have to work around YouTube guidelines, there are some things that I did so that hopefully we comply with their guidelines as far as not showing manufacturing, because this, again, isn't manufacturing. This is just simply putting parts on an already registered firearm. We're going to go through and we're going to run through that, and hopefully we comply with their guidelines and they don't take the video down. But we're actually going to do it in two parts. The first part of the video is going to be actually showing the process where we put the rifle together. The second part of the video, which will come out shortly thereafter, will be me talking about each and every component that we put on the rifle and how well it works. So that will be coming here within the next week. The hard part is already done. Now I just have to do the easy part, assemble it, and get it uploaded for you guys. And again, if for some reason the video gets flagged and taken down off of YouTube, it will be up on Full 30. So make sure you go over there and check us out. And again, we will leave a link down below to all the links for everything that we've talked about in this video over on our website. So make sure you guys check that out. If you guys have liked this video, please make sure you like, share, and subscribe. If you're listening to us on your favorite podcast app, you can send questions to us at 8541tactical@gmail.com. If you're watching us on anywhere else and you have any questions or comments over anything we've covered, you can leave them in the comment section down below or send them to us on Facebook or Twitter. And until next time, get out and shoot.